It's the Mark Davis Show on 660 AM. The Answer.
I am starting to think that in this Trump presidency, it's all about the art of the deal. And what we are seeing is a masterclass in negotiating. That the Freedom Caucus guys, who are heroic to me in so many ways for their conservatism, but I wonder about the big picture skills here just a little bit, that they are standing firm. What's the old saying? There's nothing that makes you stronger in a negotiation than the willingness to walk away. And that's what the Freedom Caucus guys were doing yesterday. Now that's what Trump is doing this morning, essentially saying, hey, you don't pass my bill, maybe a bill doesn't pass at all. Huh? How you like them apples? We'll ask Congressman Burgess, but first we have a small exercise to go through. It takes about 30 seconds. Reminds us that no matter what happens, it's Friday.
Wow! I feel good. I feel good. Ow! I feel good.
I feel good.
I feel good.
You want me to say I feel good?
I feel good.
I would not. So good. So good. I got you.
Elvis said something slightly different in mine.
Tomorrow.
But tomorrow.
Will be too late.
Will it be too late?
It's now or never.
Is it now or never?
My love.
Can repeal and replace, wait. With the musical question, we had, in all seriousness, just having a little fun here. Congressman and Dr. Michael Burgess is here. Congressman, how are you doing this morning, sir?
I am great, and I'm even better with your playlist selection.
Well.
I'm fired up, ready to go.
I am glad. Now, the last time we spoke, the expectation was this thing would pass, and I think I've tracked this, pretty well in the broadest sense. Then the Freedom Caucus guys sense that their concerns are gaining traction. They gained enough traction that the vote didn't even happen last night. It would have happened if you had the votes. You didn't. Later today, will there be the votes to pass this thing?
Well, two things happened yesterday, and they were a little bit behind the scenes. Well, the President Trump's admonition that this is now or never, obviously that was pretty public. The other thing that happened was, and this, I don't want to get too far in the weeds, but a ruling from the Senate parliamentarian that maybe you could, using the tax code, alter in the individual market the essential benefits and move those back to state control rather than federal control. And that sounds pretty technical, but that is actually a big deal. It makes the individual market look more like the large group market as far as flexibility, and it removes that one size fits all that all of the governors have, Republican and Democratic governors, have been asking us for that flexibility. So it's a big deal that it happened.
Was this also one of the Freedom Caucus, because we're all obsessing about these, few dozen guys, was this one of the things that makes it more attractive to them?
I do not know. I can't speak for them, but it was one of the moving parts, and that's how it came to be that the Senate parliamentarian said, if you just did this and moved it to the tax code rather than a policy piece, it would not be a fatal flaw under the so-called Byrd rule. And remember, we're doing this all under reconciliation, which is a 51-vote majority. Important to remember, when Obamacare passed, they had 60 votes in the Senate. And when they passed it on Christmas Eve 2009, then they lost that vote when Scott Brown was elected. And you and I had a conversation.
Yes, we did.
The day after Scott Brown's election.
This is great.
I was dancing on the grave of this dreadful health care bill. And you, Mark, you said, it reminds me of one of those old movies where the audience says to the hero, turn around, he's not dead.
Exactly. Did you just think he's dead? And let's make sure of it. I remember that so much. You had good reason to celebrate for that. But then go ahead and finish the story. Tell everybody what happened.
Well, then they came back and beat on Democrats for 3 months, and they got the bills to pass the Senate bill as written. Originally, Nancy Pelosi said, we haven't got 100 votes for this thing over in the House. And she was right. But they cajoled and prodded and pushed it along until that's why it took from Christmas Eve until Easter to get that darn thing passed. Well, look, I just have to recognize that we would not be here today without the leadership of Donald Trump. I mean, it has really been a difference that I almost can't describe to you. He came to our conference this week, spent an hour talking without notes, recognizing members individually by name. That, I mean, he's not an insider. He hasn't been up here his whole life.
And if anybody's thinking, oh, big deal, so what? That's just a social skill. No. It involves outreach. It involves connectivity. It involves the skill of politics, the art of politics, art of the deal, which obviously you might invoke for that, stuff like that. It means dude's paying attention. What a lot of people thought he was just in an empty suit, a reality TV star. It's all just a show.
Yes. And then later that night, he came and talked to our big NRCC fundraiser. Again, an hour's talk, different subjects, but obviously connecting with a different group of people. I have not seen this level of engagement, maybe a little bit when the Bush tax cuts passed in early 2003, early in my first year up here. But this has been unlike anything I've ever seen.
Well, what happened in that meeting? The way they're like, I heard standing ovation at the beginning, standing ovation at the end. Hey, this is great. Well, apparently, were they just being nice in that room?
Well, people had concerns, and you know, I don't mean to minimize that. They're legitimate concerns. I feel better about the product that we're bringing to the floor this afternoon. And two, and this is important as well, we could have gone right back into the Rules Committee last night. We did not. We did not want the optic, hey, we're doing this under dark of night.
Yeah,
we wanted this bill to pass in the daytime while people are at work or home watching their televisions and can see the debate and the vote as it occurs. We could have done it at 2 o'clock in the morning, so it could have actually happened already, but it's just better to do it in the daylight.
So what is the time frame? What is the time frame, and what kind of whip? Steve Scalise, everybody wonders, what does that whip thing mean? What does the House Majority Whip mean? That's Steve Scalise of Louisiana, and it's to whip everybody into shape for something the leadership wants. So what is today going to be like?
Well, I, you know, Mark, I may be overinterpreting it. Obviously, you've got other members coming on later who I suspect feel differently. I thought as I left that conference last night, not the one on Tuesday, but last night, I mean, you could feel a change in the air. People were ready to get this done. And I think we would have gone to I was expecting to go back to rules last night and have another all-nighter. I've had several of those over this darn bill. But the decision was made by the Speaker, and I think appropriately, that, look, we're all tired. Rules meets first thing in the morning, and they'll get their work done by around 10 o'clock this morning. We'll come down to the floor. We'll pass the rule. That will take about an hour, and then the debate will start. It will be a three-hour debate on the bill. The Democrats will have a motion to recommit, which takes about another 30 minutes. But around 4, 5, or 6 o'clock Eastern time, this thing should be on the floor, and my expectation is it's going to pass, and I don't think it's going to be close.
So I'm watching a huge gaggle of reporters following Mark Meadows around, the North Carolina congressman who heads up the Freedom Caucus, and he comes out, and it was an interesting, I don't know if this is a disconnect or not, he was so praiseful of President Trump, saying, man, this is leadership, this guy is engaged, the kind of stuff you're talking to me about, and we're really working hard to get to yes, we're really working hard to get to yes. So Meadows had been the guy who 48, 72 hours earlier had said, nope, you got to win me over. And apparently Trump did for him. But does the Freedom Caucus operate monolithically? Do they do what Meadows says, or can they splinter off individually? What's the expectation?
Well, I obviously can't speak for them. I think you will have other members on who can, and let me leave it to them. I appreciate the effort that's been put in. Great many good friends on the Freedom Caucus. We have Energy and Commerce Committee members who are on the Freedom Caucus, and I think all throughout the entire process, they have made it better. There are people who would be regarded as more moderate, who I also believe have made things better. I think we are in a place now, though, where, and this is what's so beautiful about what President Trump did yesterday, boys, girls, stop talking. Put your pencils down.
Yeah, it's time.
Turn your paper in.
You know, you and I have, and maybe this is just because I'm here and you're here, but I don't think this is unique nationally. There have been conversations going on for the better part of a decade about what to do if we ever got the chance to repeal and replace Obamacare. So, is a voter off base if they look at what's happened in the last few weeks and say, guys, you had one job and you had 8 years to figure it out? Why the chaos?
Well, the chaos is because of the way the body is designed. And, you know, you've got 435 people who are independent operators who all have their own ideas. I will tell you, and you may remember this, I actually put down many of the very ideas that are going to be incorporated into this product in a skillfully crafted book that never quite made it to the New York Times bestseller list, Doctor in the House. And I point out to people when they talk about the better way, I said, before there was a better way, there was a doctor in the house. So it's many of these principles have been out there for some time. It has been, yes, it has been an arduous task getting it all in, getting everybody into the same place. And, you know, this whole discussion of the essential health benefits. Yes, it's kind of arcane, but yes, it's kind of important. Yes, it just affects the individual market, which is a small slice of the insurance market. This does not affect the large group market. Most of the employer-sponsored insurance that is contained therein is not being affected by what we do today, but it is important. And the overriding concern that a lot of us had, especially after getting several years into the Affordable Care Act, is we've got to lower premiums. If at the end of the day the premiums are not lower, that's the metric on which we are all going to be judged.
And that's the last thing I wanted to ask you about, because so many of the objectors have said there are 14 things in there to like, but ultimately it's premiums, premiums, and then premiums, and it doesn't do enough to bring premiums down quickly enough. Was that criticism fair?
Yeah, it was fair. I mean, the Congressional Budget Office, the one good thing they did say was that it would bring the premiums down, but and I will also, in deference, it's hard. I mean, the insurance policies that people have today, those contracts have already been written. The data has already been collected on the policies that are going to be sold for the next premium year. So when the new premiums come out in November of 2017 for 2018, basically the data has already been collected by the companies, the actuaries who are in charge of that. So it is hard to move that, but I think the expectation now that there is this in the individual market, and I do want to stress that that's what we're talking about here. In the individual market, there now will be, you'll begin to see that needle move, not just a little bit, but it will move significantly, and that's, again, what people are going to be looking for. I voluntarily put myself in the individual market when Obamacare all started the implementation in 2013. I know the difficulties that people experience. I have an unsubsidized bronze plan in the federal fallback market that was available in the state of Texas. What a nightmare it has been. Expensive premiums paid for with after-tax dollars. We're actually addressing those things in the bill that is going to be done today. And, oh, by the way, there's major entitlement reform as well. $800 billion, Mark. That is unprecedented to have that amount of entitlement reform. Sure, we've got to get through some hard stuff to get there, but that is it is worth fighting for.
Congressman Michael Burgess, and he's right, by the way. His book, Doctor in the House, it was prescient. And really, its only marketplace barrier, Congressman, was its 57-word subtitle. Doctor in the House, a physician-turned-congressman, offers his prescription for scrapping Obamacare and saving America's medical system. I'm already exhausted. But you have tirelessly covered it. You did then. When did Doctor in the House come out? Like 2011?
It was one year after the Obamacare was signed.
Man.
So now it's 6 years ago this month.
So it is. I think, a wonderful historical document to go to Amazon and grab. Michael Burgess, Doctor in the House, and is just a wonderful lesson on how a lot of this all got going. And so the history plays out before our eyes. We always appreciate you, particularly today. Thank you, thank you, thank you, sir. And I have a feeling we'll talk next week, too.
Anytime. You just let me know, and I'm happy to do it, Mark.
I sure
thank
will.
You.
God bless. Thanks, Congressman and Dr. Michael Burgess, Texas District 26. All right, so I'm looking at Mary Bruce standing out front of the Capitol Dome. She's got the package that ran on ABC News this morning about the whole dust-up. So we'll see where we are, and then I'm going to ask what you want to have happen. 866-660-5759. Mark Davis, 721.